Hello, welcome to the Fantastic Fiction at KGB podcast. I'm Rajan Khanna. Fantastic Fiction at KGB is a monthly reading series held on the third Wednesday of every month at the famous KGB bar in Manhattan's East Village. Fantastic Fiction is hosted by Ellen Datlow and Matthew Kressel and features up-and-comers and luminaries in the fields of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. The following audio was recorded live at the KGB bar, so please excuse the various background noises, bumps in the night, and other disturbances that you might hear. It's a live reading in New York City, and anything can and often does happen. And now, on to this month's reading. We hope you enjoy the following recording, and we thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Good evening. Good evening. Actually, we usually don't start till 7:15, but because we're so crowded, I don't see any reason to wait. So, welcome to Fantastic Fiction at KGB. I don't recognize a lot of faces, which means you're new people, and that's great. I'm not sure how you came to come here, but welcome. I'm Ellen Datlow. I usually run this with Matt Kressel, who is hiking in the Pyrenees. Did you have a note from him or something?
He's actually in a late honeymoon in Switzerland and Italy.
Eating and hiking their way through the Pyrenees. So, and he sent pictures online. But so tonight I'm hosting with David Mercurio Rivera. So, just so you know that there are books. Nora's books are for sale in the back. There are lots of copies of her newest novel, and there are copies of her three earlier ones. And Allison Wise does not have a novel out yet. She will have a collection out in a few months, right? And the postcards you see that may have been passed around are about her collection, so grab a postcard, and when it's available, I hope you'll all buy it. And anyway, when you buy Nora's book, I'm sure she'll sign a few at the intermission and afterwards, whenever you want. Just come on up. And basically, all we want, KGB gives us a place for free. We drink. That's how we pay our way. Thank you. You can drink alcohol, you can drink soft drinks, you know, but they, you know, this is what, they're very kind to us. We've been doing this at least over 10, or I've been doing it at least over 10 years. So we will get started. One more thing before I introduce AC Wise. Later this year, we have people coming. September 16th, we have Lawrence Connolly and Thomas F. Monteleone. In October 21st, we have Fran Wilde and Nathan Ballingrud. November 18th, Robert Levy and Kathy Koja. December 16th, C.S.E. Cooney and Elizabeth Hand. January 20th, Alana Meyer and Delia Sherman. February 17th, Carola Dibble and Gemma Files. March 16th, Rio Ewers and David Nickel. April 20th, Elizabeth Baer and Scott Lynch. And May 18th, Ellen Claydes and Victor Laval. Everyone's subject to change, hopefully not. But when you schedule it this far in advance, sometimes people drop out and we have to, you know, put in different people. Anyway, tonight, we have A.C. Wise. Her short fiction appears in Apex, Uncanny, Shimmer, and The Year's Best Dark Fantasy and Horror 2015. She also co-edits Unlikely Story. Her collection, The Ultra-Fabulous Glitter Squadron Saves the World Again, will be published by, is it Leth? Letha Press, later this year. Please welcome A.C. Wise.
Thank you. So as Ellen mentioned, my collection will be out in October. She kindly handed out a bunch of postcards that have a custom recipe that I made. The stories in the collection are interspersed with cocktail recipes, and I do have a special offer for people who pre-order the collection. I will make you your own custom cocktail recipe that I will send you on a Glitter Squadron coaster. So there's information on my website if you want to pre-order the collection and check that out. And I am going to read an excerpt of a story from the collection. This is the first, you guys are the first people to hear it ever. So this is a brand new story. This is called Roller Girls Have More Fun. And, drink.
Just in case.
Just in case. I probably need it. Okay. Here we go.
Where's the corgi?
Yes. I wish I could have brought the corgi. He would have had so much fun. So, This is an excerpt from Roller Girls Have More Fun. Starlight has always been a roller girl. Even when she was little, when her mama still called her Walter, she knew what she would grow up to be. When Cindy Williams passed out glittery pink invitations in the shape of cupcakes, inviting the whole class to her birthday party at the roller rink, Walter dragged his mother to the mall, pointed to the prettiest, sparkliest, pinkest tutu that ever was, and said, "Mama, I want to wear that." Walter's mama glanced at the price tag, pressed her lips into a line, and then said, "Okay, baby, but just know the other kids are going to make fun of you." Then Walter's mama knelt down, put her hands on her son's shoulders, and looked deep into his eyes. She didn't quite sigh, but he saw a little flicker of pain and a larger flicker of determination in her gaze. She squeezed Walter's shoulders just a touch harder. "And just, you know, it doesn't matter one bit," she said. "Deep down in their hearts, they're just going to be jealous of you wearing something so pretty. But don't you pay them any mind. Ever. You're going to be the belle of the ball." The moment they got home from the mall, Walter pulled the tutu out of the bag and slipped it on. Looking at himself in the mirror, he smiled and whispered the name he'd secretly been hugging tight to his chest for weeks, mouthing it silently in the dark as he fell asleep, holding it like a perfect round marble on his tongue. Starlight. He hadn't told anyone about his real name yet, not even his mama. He'd gotten it from a princess in a cartoon. She rode a unicorn and wore a bright, shiny tiara, and Walter always imagined she smelled like strawberries. He hadn't dared say the name aloud yet, but now it finally felt right. And so Starlight went to Cindy Williams' birthday party, wearing the pinkest tutu that ever was, and when everyone gathered to play whipcrack, Starlight got to be the end of the chain. And when everyone skated in line so fast that whoever was on the end of the chain had no control, Starlight understood, in the moment before Brent Davies let go of her hand, just what her mama had been talking about. Her pink tutu survived, but Starlight's nose was broken that day. She skinned her knee, too. The barrier surrounding the Moonlight Madness roller disco rink was notoriously unforgiving. To her credit, Starlight didn't cry. She picked herself up, but didn't skate back to the line of seven-year-olds laughing at the boy in his tutu. She lifted her chin, took her skates off, and handed them to the bored-looking attendant, half slumbering at his desk. Whether Cindy Williams' mother never noticed there was one less child at the party by the end, or whether she was simply relieved to be rid of Walter in a tutu, Starlight never knew. With a quarter tucked into one of her shoes, Starlight called her mother from a payphone outside the Moonlight Madness roller rink. She didn't mention the bloody nose or the skinned knee. She pretended her stomach hurt from too much cake and ice cream and asked if Mama would please come take her home. Mama didn't say anything about the busted nose or the skinned knee as Starlight climbed into the beat-up Chevrolet, more rust than powder blue paint by now. Instead, Mama handed over a tissue and drove back home. Starlight's daddy wasn't the understanding kind, and though she never said it, Starlight suspected Mama was just as glad he'd left before he'd ever had a chance to disown his son. There were bruises Starlight wasn't supposed to know about, proving just what Daddy thought of women and men and their places in the world. And he'd have been mighty sore at Mama for being so proud of her son. On her 18th birthday, Starlight's Mama gave her a brand new pair of roller skates. "I was thinking maybe you could get a job at the new Moondusk Rollerama," she said. She didn't look Starlight in the eye. Starlight was prettier than her. Had been for a while. And she was afraid her girl must be ashamed of having a mama so plain. She should have done better by her. Brought her up right. She should have taken Starlight to the best salons for hair and nails, bought her the fanciest dresses. But what did she know with her bleached up hair, turquoise eyeshadow, and three kitten gray t-shirt over worn thin black stretch pants? Starlight's mama fidgeted. She looked at her cigarette. She turned her lighter over and over in her hands. Starlight, her beautiful daughter, startled her by planting a kiss on her cheek. Thank you, Mama. They're perfect. Starlight took the skates to her room. She set them on her dresser, lined with Stop and Save cosmetics. She told her Mama the truth. They were perfect. White leather, red wheels, laces aching for her fingers. But how much had they cost? Starlight chewed her lip. She lifted one skate, spinning the bright red wheel. If she followed Mama's advice and got a job, she could help out with the bills. Starlight picked up the other skate, and something rattled. She dug in the boot. Buried in the toe was one last present, a compact of pink lip gloss, the rosy color of fireworks burning over the lake on the 4th of July. Starlight glides effortlessly around the edge of the rink, palm upturned, fingers splayed, balancing a tray of frosty milkshakes. Her uniform is regulation spotless. Her hair and makeup are her own. Today, her teased-up do is silver, threaded with old tinsel salvaged from Christmas decorations, and her lipstick is seashell pink, studded with the most kissable glitter imaginable. She barely breaks stride, handing out each drink, collecting payment with a smile and a perfect pirouette spin. She never gets an order wrong, and everyone at the Moondust loves her. She shows up early, not just on time, and she even had her own skates when she applied for the job. Tony, the Rollerama's manager, hired her before she even opened her mouth to say her name. The Rollerama isn't just a job for Starlight. It's freedom. Gliding around and around under the spin of the colored lights feels like love. The music thumps in time with her blood. When she's skating, everything is perfect for just a little while. Starlight doesn't have to worry about most of her paycheck going to help Mama with the bills and how it's barely enough. She doesn't have to worry about Mama working her second job or that nasty cough she can't shake. And while those are part of the reason Starlight took the job at the Rollerama, when she's skating, they're not what she thinks about. No, it's all about the wheels. Her favorite times are the brief moments when the Rollerama is closing and all the customers have gone home. Alone except for Tony and the other employees, Starlight takes center stage, executing the most perfect twirl under the disco ball just before the lights go off for the night. Glints of silver fly around her like the universe holding her in its arms and dancing. For that one moment, everything is perfect. She doesn't have any worries at all. When she doesn't have orders to fill, Starlight glides around the edges of the rink, watching the customers. Couples on first date holding hands as they twirl under the lights, children fighting to get their wobbly fawn legs under control, teenagers in their black leather jackets, gathered on the fringes, too cool to skate, judging and watching, hunters on the prowl. Starlight keeps an eye on these last ones, the popped collar hyenas. She watches out for their prey too, the sad boys and girls skating alone, reaching desperately after the freedom of the glide, but so unhappy inside their skins. She is ever vigilant, ready to swoop in and intervene. On this particular night, Starlight marks them, the predators, Dean, Eddie, and Vic. They remember Starlight back when she was called Walter. She remembers them when they were Theodore and Victor, and Dean wore cloudy-lensed glasses with thick black rims. They've forgotten this, and their names, but they remember the whipcrack kid crashing into the wall at Cindy Williams' birthday party and laughing so hard they almost wet themselves. Starlight has grown up, but they haven't. They're watching a girl with frizzy red hair and glasses almost as thick as Dean's used to be. She can't be more than 15, wearing a bulky sweater to hide the fact that her breasts haven't come in yet. She also wears thick tights over knobby knees. Her coltish legs haven't grown into them. She's afraid to smile because her braces only came off last week. Her name is Deborah. Starlight knows because she's been paying attention. Deborah has come to the Rollerama just about every weekend for the past 3 months, watching the grace some lucky boys and girls have found in their bodies. She never joins in their formations on the polished floorboards. Deborah is a good skater, but she's afraid. She doesn't trust her body, doesn't trust that if the girls and boys she watches so avidly ever catch sight of her, they won't make her the end of the whipcrack line. So she makes herself small, gliding on the periphery, trying not to be seen. And on the periphery, she doesn't see Dean, Vic, and Eddie watching. But Starlight watches for her. She sees Dean pull a wad of gum from his mouth as Deborah prepares to skate past, ready to drop it in her frizzy hair. Starlight is quicker, cutting in front of Deborah without cutting her off, making it look like an accident until she reaches Dean and grabs his wrist. "Don't even think about it," she says, twisting Dean's wrist hard. He drops the wad of gum. Dean's mouth opens, and Starlight flashes him her sweetest smile. She gives him an almost curtsy, retrieving the dropped gum and a napkin before anyone can skate over it, getting it tangled in their wheels. Dean is still sputtering as Starlight glides away. As she passes the trash can, dropping the gum-filled napkin, Starlight notices someone else watching tonight, too. The woman stands at the back of the bleachers surrounding the Rollerama's ring. Her hair is copper, teased high and smoothed into a bouffant dome. Her dress matches her hair, the color of a new penny, short and tight over chunky, high-heeled boots of soft, dark green leather, reaching well past her knees. Her jacket matches her boots. Arms crossed, she watches Dean, Eddie, and Vic intently. Starlight slows. She's never seen the woman before, never seen her around town at all. Feeling herself watched, the woman turns towards Starlight. The edge of her mouth creeps up in something that can't quite be called a smile. Starlight blushes, spinning away. Luckily, the light pops up on the other side of the ring, indicating an order ready to be collected. She loads up her tray with milkshakes cold enough to frost their glasses. Then Starlight glides across the ring, her tray perfectly balanced. She isn't expecting it when Dean swoops in. He crisscrosses his skates, making them hum as he whirs past. His hand flicks out so fast he's already gone before the tray clatters to the ground, shattering glass and spattering chocolate and strawberry. "Watch where you're going, faggot." Hyena laughter trails behind Vic and Eddie, following in their leader's wake. The three of them glide past her, and Starlight promises herself she won't cry, even though her eyes sting as she wipes at the mess soaking her uniform. She blinks false eyelashes hard and fast until the tears retreat. She won't give them the satisfaction. Instead, she pastes on a smile, bigger and brighter than before as she gathers the broken glass. "Hey." Tony, the Rollerama's owner, comes down from his observation booth above the rink and touches Starlight's shoulder. "You don't have to do that. We'll get someone else to clean it up." Starlight straightens. She has to fight tears all over again at the look on Tony's face. "You say the word and those guys are banned for life." Tony has a smile that peeks out of one side of his mouth. "It's fine," Starlight says, smoothing her skirt. She notices one of her perfect shell-pink nails is broken. "You can take off early," Tony offers. "No, I want to finish my shift." Starlight squares her shoulders. "Okay then, but don't worry about this." Tony gestures at the glass. Then he snaps his fingers. "Hey, Courtney, grab a mop and broom, will ya? I'm gonna clean this up." Starlight is almost shaking with gratitude, hoping it doesn't show as she glides across the rink. She doesn't dare look back, afraid the Basset Hound sadness of Tony's eyes will break her. Maybe she never had a daddy growing up, but she found one here at the Rollerama, and it hurts every time she sees him worrying about her. Shift over, Starlight walks to her car with her skates slung over her shoulders. She's still wearing her uniform, even though it smells like chocolate and strawberry and sugary whipped cream. Her feet hurt. She's tired, and she just wants to go home. One of her wheels isn't quite right. Something slipped out of alignment during the incident, and she finished out her shift with a wobble. Moths circle parking lot lights shining the color of faded bruises. Her car, a beat-up Volkswagen Rabbit just as rusty as her mama's Chevy ever was, is one of the last left, except for a forest green Mustang just set outside of the glow of the lights. The hairs on the back of Starlight's neck prickle. Dean, Vic, and Eddie are still here, waiting. "What'd we tell you about watching yourself, faggot?" Vic pushes away from the car, a scrap of darkness separating from a larger clot of shadow. "We don't want your kind around here." Dean says nothing, smacking fist against palm, grinning. Their eyes are bright, shining in a way that Starlight associates with fevers. She is tired, so very tired. It's not just the milkshakes. It's whip crack, and Cindy Williams' birthday party, and being told she didn't belong in either the girls' bathroom or the boys' bathroom. Her mama's thin cheeks and ugly cough. It's everything weighing on her shoulders since she was 7 years old. Starlight doesn't think. She slings the roller skates from her shoulder, holding their knotted strings and whipping them around so fast they blur. They catch Vic in the jaw. Dean and Eddie stare at her. Starlight's keys are in her hands, threaded between her fingers. She lashes out like their claws. Dean screams. He trips, turning before rising to scramble away. Then only Eddie is left. Starlight drops her voice to a growl. Show me what you got, motherfucker. She's never spoken such foul words before. Her mama raised her right, but Starlight is angry, smelling of spilled milkshakes, her chest heaving with all the hurt ever done to her. Eddie must see the shape of Starlight's pain, even if he doesn't understand why Starlight is hurt. The pain is jagged, the edges turned outward, ready to draw blood. Eddie is an idiot, but he's wise enough to know to run. Starlight watches him flee the parking lot, and then slowly lowers her hand, keys jangling as she does. Nice work. Starlight whirls, ready to attack again. It's the woman from the Rollerama, the one who'd watched her earlier. The sodium bruised lights shine off her dress. Shame floods through Starlight. She looks at Vic, still rolling on the ground, clutching his jaw. Shock sets in. She trembles. Starlight will never be able to look Mama in the eye again after what she's done. Her knees threaten to buckle, everything tilting sideways. Hey, relax, kid. A corner of the woman's mouth lifts, but her eyes, the same copper gold as her dress and her hair, too beautiful to be real, remain hard. I'm here to offer you a job.
Thank you. So, okay, we're gonna take a break now, about 15 minutes. Do you wanna talk?
What are you doing now?
Okay. Before you go, before you order another drink or hang out or go to the bathroom, whatever. Gordon Lindsay, our sound guy.
You have been listening to the Fantastic Fiction at KGB podcast, recorded live at the KGB Bar. We hope you enjoyed what you heard, and we thank you for listening. We also wish to thank Gordon Lindsay for providing the audio, and Rajan Khanna, that's me, for the introduction and farewell. And always, thanks to our many fans of Fantastic Fiction at KGB for supporting us all these years. See you next month.